Newsmakers is brought to you by the Illinois American Water Company. I'm Gary Moore on today's program.
But what bothered me is that it just seemed like it was a normal, everyday part of the neighborhood. And I think that's what bothered me the most, because truthfully, that's not normal. It's not normal to walk out of your house and see someone dead in a car.
A man who has seen all 19 Peoria homicide victims, Peoria County Coroner Jamie Harwood, gives his perspective. Also,
we were able to help a lot of people make sure their utilities weren't shut off and they weren't evicted. And we continue to help people with the eviction moratorium expiring.
The moratorium on free rent is up. Joe Doolin with the City of Peoria's Code Enforcement tells renters what to expect now. But first, Peoria County Coroner Jamie Harwood. It's just been a rough month. It's been a rough start to the summer. And unfortunately, we have had homicides where we've had young people who have been victims. And that is always especially hard. How have you been processing that?
You know, it's a lot for myself and my staff to process, to be honest. You know, adults who have lived most of their life in their 80s and 90s are a little easier to take care of because you figure it's the natural process. But to lose somebody through violence, whether they're a teenager, 12 or 15 or 20 or even in their 30s, it's very, very difficult, because I always think, man, if we could have just gotten in front of that person ahead of time, if we could go back in time to get ahead of them, you know, and to teach them and mentor them and to give them something to look forward to, maybe they would have been in a different place at a different time and have a different path. But, and I think that's probably the hardest part for me is what could we have done to prevent that?
And there are a lot of people who are pondering that question, and there are a lot of people who are working on the answers to that. We have a number of dedicated people in our community who champion the cause of youth development and counseling and advice for parents in terms of raising kids in these tough times.
That's the thing, Gary. You know, first of all, I think we put way too high of expectations on people, especially single moms in the 616-0305 and 04 zip codes who are working the best to provide for their family. It might be a single home with children, or it might be a multi-generational home with a grandparent or an aunt. And then we expect mom to make sure her kids are getting to school, make sure they're getting their education, make sure that they're, you know, maybe going to a part-time job. And I think these are just such unrealistic expectations to make sure that the mom is taking care of all these things, or the grandparents taking okay. And so I'm going to put that over here in the spot right here for a second. And then when I go to these homicide scenes, the crowds are humongous. And these are humongous crowds from the neighborhood. And I think, why can't the neighborhood people support each other and the single mom or the single grandparent, you know, taking care of these kids? But it's everyone's responsibility to, and you know, the it's not cliche to say it takes a village, because it really, really does, you know, to help people out where they need the help, you know, specifically with their children. And because if we don't take that step to support people through these, to raising their children, I don't think it's going to change. I really don't.
People have different theories about what is causing this. Is it poverty, unemployment, the stress of living in these depressed environments, peer pressure, gang, drugs, relationship issues? It would vary from case to case. But I think one thing that we can generally agree upon is that it would appear that there is a disturbing normalcy to gun violence. It's happening too often. It just seems like people are now okay with having a gun and having gun violence resolve conflict. And we are worried, of course, when we see young people using guns. And then we start thinking, okay, well, what is that about? Is it the result of too much video games, you know, Fortnite, Grand Theft Auto? Is it too much glorification of that in the music and the music videos that they watch with the gangster rappers, the movies? What have you been able to glean from these scenes? I mean, do they yield any answers along those lines?
Well, I think we can, if we put this all into one box, I would agree with you. Grand Theft Auto, Fortnite, all of these types of games, they create an illusion of reality that it's okay to carry and wield a gun, and even song lyrics are very, very powerful to people. But, and I'll admittedly say, I have a 17-year-old and a 21-year-old who play Fortnite and different games like that. But they don't go out and mimic what they're listening to and what they're seeing. They just don't. And I don't know what the definitive difference is, but you mentioned the word poverty. And I think poverty plays a big role in this. When we talk about educational disparities, work disparities, home disparities, workplace, grocery stores, housing, all that, I think all that plays a huge role in the development of people's minds and their environment and things like that. And poverty is not normal, and I think we've normalized poverty for some reason. I don't even understand that, but I think that's pivotal. And if we look at my infant deaths, my suicides, homicides, and drug overdoses, all of them are occurring in the highest rates in our poverty-stricken city. And I think that's something we need to really take a look at, because I think poverty is playing a huge role in all of these things. These are the worst things that can happen to people in a lifetime. You know, a loved one dying of a drug overdose, a two-month-old infant in a co-sleeping environment. You know, all of these things are poverty-driven, and it's something we really need to take a look at when we talk about equal housing and food deserts and education and truancy rates and can your fourth grader read, you know, at a fourth grade reading level. And I think all of these play a role in being able to interpret, what am I listening to in this lyric? What am I listening to or seeing in this video game that I'm playing that's violent? And I think there's a division, an educational division in those two types of things. And I think the base of it is poverty. Mm-hmm. I really do.
You and I have talked before about how in the movies, somebody like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon gets shot, and Mel Gibson, and they stumble around and they still fight the guy and fall out the third story window onto the concrete and roll over and kick somebody and still shoot back. And then they get up, and at the end of the movie, they got a bloody bandage on their arm where they've been shot and they're walking around. But that doesn't happen. You know, when you get shot, 9 times out of 10, you're down and out for the count. And people need to know that, right?
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is the portrayal on TV, regardless of what they're watching, it could be even Chicago Fire, Chicago Hope, Chicago Police, whatever the show is, it's just not reality. But it's interpreted as reality, and the consequences and the ramifications of what the action was isn't supportive of where the actual reality is, and that's what's unfortunate. I just don't think if I pull this gun out and I fire at somebody that I'm going to understand those consequences or the ramifications or even the outcome of the person that I hit.
There was a young person in my family who shall remain nameless, and I slapped him against his shoulder. Okay, I will admit to that. There was a mailman across the street, and he kind of put his fingers up like he was picking the mailman off. Okay, and I slapped him across the shoulder and said, "Don't do that. That's not cool. I don't want to see you doing that." Am I being too sensitive?
I don't think in this day and age right now, where we're at with 19 homicides in Peoria County, I don't think that's too sensitive. I think that's something we should take action for. I think that's something we should be cognizant of, to be honest, and provide a teaching lesson right then and there. I don't think that's too sensitive at all. I think it's us looking at our reality of what we need to do and how we need to act and what kind of example we need to set.
Last couple questions. You were disturbed on one homicide scene that the kids in the neighborhood were allowed to witness it, that nobody was keeping them back from viewing it. Explain what your concern was.
Well, I just think about how I grew up, and it just wasn't something that my parents would have allowed me to see, knowing how tragic that is and what that looks like and the trauma around that, and the police and the firemen and body bags, and that reality is so stark. But what bothered me is that it just seemed like it was a normal, everyday part of the neighborhood. And I think that's what bothered me the most, because truthfully, that's not normal. It's not normal to walk out of your house and see someone dead in a car. So the fact that the kids were allowed to be out there was really bothersome to me, and I think it's something that we should be shielding our kids from. Not necessarily shielding them from reality per se, but the graphicness of the reality, I think, is something that we need to be cognizant of.
Yeah. Jamie Hartwood, I would say it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I mean, it isn't.
It's not. I mean, it's grim information. It's grim statistics. It's just horrible things that we talk about, Gary. But at the same time, I hope that your listeners will know that, you know, this information that we're providing will help, you know, in some way be preventative.
Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. You take care.
It is worth noting that in one of the latest Peoria homicide cases, a 15-year-old was arrested and is now in juvenile detention, charged with reckless discharge of a firearm. The victim, a 12-year-old, was shot inside his home on Seibold. Dontarius Edwards' mother, Karen Shook, was also arrested in that case. Mothers Against Guns having an event this weekend, a walk and a rally that steps off from the Carver Center. Tanya Williams is encouraging everyone to go to her Facebook page to find out about future events as well. Now to my conversation with Joe Doolin. We usually talk to Mr. Doolin about code enforcement in the city of Peoria, but the big news is the moratorium on rent is over. Renters will now have to pay up. What was the idea behind the moratorium? This was to help people get through that horrible COVID year, right?
Yeah, so I think what the federal and state government were thinking is that, you know, the pandemic is going to financially impact a lot of people, and things were put in place to make sure that, like, residents, so the federal and state government knew at some point they're going to have to provide some financial assistance resources for residents who were struggling with the pandemic. And I think the moratorium was really put in place so the federal government and state government had time to roll out those programs to people to get them the aid that they needed to help. And I think that's what we saw and why it was in place, to really just make sure that the people who needed resources could get connected to them, to ensure, you know, that during the middle of a national emergency and a pandemic, people weren't also experiencing homelessness.
And in Peoria, how did that play out in terms of the number of people that we were able to assist?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's one of the remarkable things about the city, is we have an incredibly talented and caring population, and our social service agencies are fantastic. You know, one of the big things that we did back in January and February, when we saw these things, that we could see that the utility moratorium and the eviction moratorium were eventually going to come up. And city staff started meeting with some of our local nonprofits like PCCO, the Heart of Home for All, Continuum of Care, Salvation Army, Phoenix Development Services, really to try to, and the health department, really try to put a game plan of what we can do to assist people. And we worked very closely with United Way 2-1-1 to make sure they had all the resources available. The city used a significant portion of its CDBG entitlement funds to help people. But the main chunk of money came from two different sources. One was the state of Illinois gave PCCO a significant amount of additional LIHEAP money to help with utilities. And then IDA launched a rental assistance program. So really our role, and the role of our nonprofits in the community, was really about education and making residents connected to those resources that existed, and making sure they knew where to contact for them. Because talking about such a problem on such a huge level, the city, there's just not, the funds don't exist locally to do that. And luckily, the state and federal government really stepped up to provide that assistance. And our major role was kind of coordinating with the other social service agencies to make sure our residents were connected to those, could apply, and could get those resources.
Okay. You're kind of breaking up a little bit, but that's I got the gist of what you were saying. You're saying that the city's role was basically you're like the quarterback or the point guard, you know, just making sure that all those community partners are working together and collaborating to make sure that the residents are served. Did you have any numbers in terms of how many people we were able to serve, or was there a goal in terms of being able to serve a X number of people, or is there any way of knowing?
Well, you know, I know the LIHEAP program that PCCO operated through the state of Illinois was able to serve about, I think, 2,000 or 3,000 customers to make sure that they didn't get their utility, their electricity shut off. Through our CDBG program that we did provide direct assistance, we were able to help about 300 or 400 people with that. And then IDA hasn't released its numbers yet, what they've helped with the rental assistance, but just based on the call load and the connection in the landlord community, they essentially had any funds for anyone who applied. So, you know, that was a very good analogy. I wouldn't say quarterback or point guard, because I think, you know, it really was more of maybe a point guard's a good analogy, because we really were part of a team with all of our social service agencies, and everyone played their role and what they brought to the table, and just really proud of our local community and the work everyone did to really connect people. And, you know, I know there were people who weren't able to get help and still can't get help, and anyone who still needs resources should still call 211 and see what's available, and we'll try to connect people. But we were able to help a lot of people, make sure their utilities weren't shut off and they weren't evicted, and we continue to help people with the eviction moratorium expiring.
So what happens now? What does the future look like for those residents who were served, and now those programs are being phased out?
Yeah, so the way the state of Illinois is doing it is starting August 1st, landlords can begin filing evictions, but they can't actually execute the eviction until August 30th. So any residents who are going through this and maybe facing eviction still have some time to reach out to the nonprofit agencies in our area to see what help exists. And, you know, Prairie State Legal Services has done a phenomenal job doing outreach and connecting. I would encourage any resident who might be facing an eviction to reach out to them. And they've partnered with Phoenix Properties and Salvation Army to have some of those resources available at eviction court, so if someone can get some extra help and we can kind of work with the landlord to see how we can keep people in properties, they're doing that. So there is still a little bit of time for people to reach out to the resources in our community to see what is available. We do have some resources. If you do get evicted and you don't have a place to live, we fortunately in Peoria have two or three phenomenal shelters and different affordable housing that we can try to connect you to. So just the biggest message I can get across to anyone is to reach out to 211. They're the best resource for everything that's going on in the community and can connect you to anything that exists. And, you know, they're here to help, and so is the city, and so is some of our great partner agencies.
We talked to some landlords some time ago when this was first being rolled out, and not surprisingly, a lot of them were not happy with it because they were not getting rent payments. But it was my understanding, didn't the landlords get some relief from somewhere, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, you know, I completely feel for landlords. They've had to go a long way without getting rental payments for those that couldn't pay. But I think when you look at the situation, IDA and the state of Illinois really stepped up with the federal funds they got, and they really did provide that rental assistance. They provided up to 18 months back of rental assistance for those that applied. So landlords who had tenants who weren't paying rent could have connected to that program and got the backlog of money that was paid directly to the landlord, so it didn't have to pass through the tenants. So there was some opportunity for landlords to collect some of those funds. Some landlords who might have had tenants move out midway through and been out 4 or 5 months probably don't get those resources, and I do feel really bad for them that they had to go through that. But it's just an unfortunate situation that we found ourselves in the middle of a pandemic, and I think everyone just tried to put the best programs forward, and some landlords obviously probably took a very tough financial hit for it. But hopefully with things, you know, hopefully we can kind of recover and bounce back and get people connected to these programs and keep tenants in properties and just kind of keep working and moving forward with some compassion and empathy for everyone.
The last time I talked to you, you were encouraging tenants to not look at this period of time as one where you had no responsibility, that if you did have some discretionary money, that you should consider squirreling it away so that when this day came and you had to pay, that you would have some money to pay. Now, if you got a stimulus check instead of maybe spending it on recreation or whatever, you know, it's your money, you can do whatever you want. But at some point in time, these programs are going to end and you're going to have to face your financial commitment. Are you getting any indication from tenants, from residents, that they are prepared to meet the future and go back to their responsibility of being rent payers?
You know, we really haven't heard one way or the other. You know, we talked to some of our nonprofit partners, and everyone's, I think, a little not sure how the next month is going to go. But you're absolutely right that we tried to get the message across to tenants that just because you couldn't get evicted doesn't mean if you had the funds available that you shouldn't pay rent. Because we knew eventually the eviction moratorium would get lifted. And, you know, for those that might not have enough to pay everything, I would encourage them to reach out to the landlord and see if they could reach some sort of payment plan to get caught up. Contact Curry State Legal Services. They've done a great job of trying to be that mediator between tenants and landlords when there's issues like that. Or maybe you were out of a job and not able to pay your full rent, but maybe now you do have employment and you can work out some sort of back payment to get caught up. Those are the type of things we're really encouraging people to work on and really communicate with the tenants and landlords.
Yeah. Hey, I can't ever let you get off the phone without talking a little bit about code enforcement, because I know for that COVID year, you kind of took your foot off the gas as far as that is concerned. What can you tell us about a resumption in code enforcement with the city?
Yeah, so I love code enforcement, so I always appreciate talking about it. I think, you know, from the standpoint of some of the things that code enforcement traditionally looks at on exterior properties, like peeling paint, the cosmetic things, you know, we work with people a lot more diligently during the pandemic, understanding that people didn't have the resources sometimes to devote into their exterior of their property. I mean, we still took all of the interior issues and life safety issues very serious because people needed to make sure that they had safe housing to live in. But, you know, code enforcement is back, you know, working very hard this summer, making sure people have their grass cut, litter picked up, and really, you know, sometimes with properties, you know, if you might have peeling paint or a few cosmetic issues with your structure, but you can really put in the work to make your yard nice. And as long as you're showing effort, we're happy to work with you and happy to encourage you and engage you to make those commitments to make your neighborhood look better. So they're kind of back in full force, but still happy to work with people to make sure progress and making sure we're improving neighborhoods is really the key to everything. And if that's through enforcement, that's great. But if we can get it through kind of encouragement and engagement, that's the first route we want to take.
All right, Joe Doolin. Hey, thank you for your time, sir.
Yep, take care. Have a good weekend.
And as Joe Doolin mentioned, if you are a renter and you're still facing some financial hardship, you're encouraged to call 211. And if you are interested in the work of Mothers Against Guns with Tanya Williams, her number is 235-3529. Newsmakers is brought to you by the Illinois American Water Company for WPNV. WPNV. We're Peoria's neighborhood voice.